Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, May 4th, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adioye Jr. Joining me is Gameonesis, a.k.a. Janet Garcia.
Yo, what's good?
Janet, what do you think is going through Clawmaster's mind right now?
I don't even know where to begin with that answer.
Clawmaster is a person in chat who, right before the show, chatted, "Oh man, I hope Gary Whitta makes it on today's show." To which I replied, "Oh yeah, it's a Gary and Fran Mirabella day. We got him. We got him real good. He had no idea. Yeah, April Fools. We're like, we're 4 days. What month is it? Well, God, we're in May. I was gonna say we're 4 days in April. We're 4 days into May."
That's probably where the Witta request comes from, because Star Wars Day. But I will say, if y'all in chat are like, "Oh, that's such a whack joke," just reflect on all the jokes you throw at us at every second and every day in this chat, because it's the same energy.
That's two goddams in one intro, Janet. Me and you are on fire today. Janet, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm. I'm doing pretty good. You know, I woke up in time to do at least one task, and that's good enough for me. You know, I got my shower in, and then I just poured some coffee. So it's not that glamorous, but for me, I'm like, you know, I read some stuff before as well. So, you know, like checking out what's going on with the show. But yeah, what about you? How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's been a very standard, what's today, Wednesday? It's been a very standard Wednesday. I did get my Starbucks. I had my small iced coffee. I got my croissant. You know, like, it's been one of those days where I got home from Starbucks and I was just like, yeah, it's a weekday.
Why did you get the small and not the medium?
Why not? I don't even finish the small, if I'm being honest.
Really?
I drink like half of this thing, yeah.
Why? Why do you even get it at this point? Just for the vibes?
I respect it. Pretty much. It's like a placebo effect situation where I take two sips of the coffee and I feel the effect. Except for today, where
you did have a tea kick, and tea is like a little, it's a different type of caffeine intensity. So I think like when you got back kind of going to the Starbucks coffee route, like that was a lot for you to go back to.
Yeah.
How long have you been drinking coffee, real quick? Because this could be a whole separate segment.
A while, because before this job, I worked at Starbucks headquarters, and I worked there starting in like.
Do you know how to like make all the drinks and stuff?
No.
Or did you?
No.
Like, were you doing something else? Like, were you not a barista? Were you like?
No, I wasn't a barista. I worked in like the financial lease department. So basically, I did like a lot of like lease work and a lot of admin stuff. But on each floor are multiple kitchens. And there's always somebody who does know how to make coffee at Starbucks. Like, somebody's gonna make the coffee, and then like you just go and you partake from the pot they made, and it's great. But when I was there, I did drink coffee, but that's where I realized that I preferred tea a bit more, because I didn't like the way coffee made me feel. Because like I'll drink coffee. I think I get like the harder coffee crash, which I was never a fan of, but then also like, you know, I mean, coffee makes your stomach do wild things.
Just pile it on.
Yeah, it's like alcohol, like, but you just never stop drinking it, and then you never feel the downside. You know?
Yeah, see, like I don't relate. Well, maybe it's why, is that why I always need a nap all the time? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I mean, probably, yeah. Like, I have the post, you probably have this too, the post KFGD like crash, where you're like, man, I just did a high energy activity. I'm going to lay down for a bit, and then you wake up and it's 4 p.m.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Pretty much.
But yeah, like, I was drinking coffee there, and then after a while, I was like, you know what, man, I'm going to transition to tea, because they had a lot of tea in that office as well. And like, that's where I really started to gain a love for tea, because I started to discover different flavors of tea, and I started to like get into like the mint teas. I started to get into like the chamomiles, even though chamomile you probably shouldn't have until like before bed, because it's like there's no caffeine in that thing.
Sleepy tea.
It's like a very much a sleepy tea. But I kind of waned off of coffee then, and then now, like, working at Kinda Funny is what brought me back to coffee in a bigger way, because I found that I could really use the burst of energy, especially before hosting a Kinda Funny Games Daily. But it's the thing of trying to find the balance. Like, I've gone through a journey since hosting Kinda Funny Games Daily, where like I started off, I was doing tea, I was like, oh, tea is working. Tea was not working. Decided to move to coffee. Coffee was working, but it was working a little bit too well, to where now I feel like I am like too energied up, you know, like I'm like shaky. I have the
coffee
shake.
On that border, but you're like becoming Greg, you know, it's like, yeah, past that, when you pass that threshold, you can't come
your
back.
Your power is going above 9,000, you know?
Yeah. Some would say.
And then I started like microdosing coffee. Like I'll drink sips just to see like how far I could go with it, or like where like the nice sweet spot was. But I've also found that like, there's just a big inconsistency with me and how I react to coffee. Like it depends on time of day. It depends on if I've eaten. It depends on how much water I drank to start the day off with. There's a whole science experiment going on with my body that I've still not have gotten to the bottom of. But that said, like, this is part of the routine now. I think half of why I go out and get coffee nowadays is to literally just leave my apartment, because I could DoorDash coffee all day, every day. That's what
I feel like Snowbike DoorDash Mike does. That's so. I feel like if you're DoorDashing coffee, I'm just gonna throw out there, I don't know Snowbike Mike's finances, I feel like you're in a different tax bracket than me. If you're out here DoorDashing coffee, like, no, I can't. I can't get with it. It's too much.
And like, I just like leaving the apartment is the thing. Yeah. Like, I do like the ritual of actually going on the drive and coming back and like getting the sunlight, because that's the thing that I was missing a lot during the pandemic.
No, yeah, sunlight. That and like, this sounds so dark, you know, real quick before we get into the, you know, all the stuff of the show, but like just getting air, like fresh air. I'm like, y'all breathe this air lately? It's different than inside air.
Oh my god, yeah,
it's so air. Rough.
Dude, nature hits differently nowadays.
It does. I'm like, yo, the graphics on this thing is insane.
Did I tell you about how I had a moment when I was weeks into Elden Ring? There's so many moments in Elden Ring where it's like, man, this view is gorgeous. Wow, I can't believe they're able to pull off like this design in the world and the environments. A few weeks into playing Elden Ring, I was on a McDonald's run, not in the game, in real life. I go to McDonald's, I go through the drive-thru, and as I'm turning out of the drive-thru, I like get a view, because San Francisco is very hilly, right? Like, I got a view of like a downturn of a hill, like going for like probably like a mile. And I saw the view and I was like, wow, like that is, the graphics here are gorgeous. And like, that's when it hit me that I was playing too much Elden Ring. I was like, God, what is wrong with my brain that I looked at a view in real life and I really thought that, like, man,
there's
design
is wrong with your brain,
as we know, with how you make your waffles, with all of the stuff that you do, you know, like there's
every now and then I get a tweet that is like, no, bless, everybody else is crazy. The microwaving waffles is an acceptable way to make
and that's every once in a while, you get another psychopath who's like, oh yeah, like I finally found, you know, my people here. You're not getting bombarded.
That's why I know I'm in a simulation.
You know, of the majority of people being like, oh,
that's why I know we're in a simulation, though, because like, as I say it, I'm like, this is such, like, there's nothing wrong with this. It is such a normal thing to want to microwave waffles, and everybody else is acting like it's crazy. But me, I know it's normal, but then I get one of those tweets where it's like, no, blessing, you're right. And I'm like, cool, this person is also in the simulation than I am. Like, they're one of the chosen ones.
My boyfriend Isaiah did say that he has microwaved waffles before.
Thank you. See, Isaiah is one of the chosen ones.
He's like, I don't even know how to react to that.
I don't think we should be calling y'all chosen ones, definitely.
I just can't stand in general when in my own household, like Isaiah will be like, you know, I played this game and Barrett's right. I'm like, I get enough of this at work, okay? I don't need this at home, too.
Here's the thing, right? Somebody chat says,
is this confirmation that Isaiah's been playing Psychonauts 2 or what's up?
No. This was for like when he tried to play Jack 2 and he thought it was awful. He's like, you know, Barrett's making some points. I'm like, you know what? Like,
somebody in chat said, are you chosen or are you lazy? To be clear, it takes less time to toast these waffles than to microwave these waffles. I'm putting them in there for 2 minutes at a time. I can get that thing toasted in like 30 seconds, I imagine. I've never done it before. That's why I've done it before. But no, it's not out of laziness. I had a toaster growing up. I just decided not to use it because the soft pillow like waffles was just the way to go.
Breakfast. At Blessing's place, it's going to be two sips of a tall Starbucks coffee and a soggy waffle waiting for you.
Janet, enough about my exquisite taste in breakfast. Let's talk about today's stories, which include a huge report regarding Nintendo's company culture, Overwatch 2 updates, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kind of Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. housekeeping for you. A new Kind of Funny podcast is up right now with the crew talking about the best and worst streaming services. There's also a Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness spoiler-free screencast review. Those are up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunny and on podcast services around the globe. And then over on Kind of Funny Games, we've got a new episode of Kind of Funny Wrestling where Joey Noel is wreaking absolute havoc. That is up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Anonymous and Fargo Brady. Today we're brought to you by ExpressVPN, Chime, and Babbel, but we'll babble on about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 7 stories today.
Baker's dozen.
I gotta check out what's going on in Slack because you guys are messaging back and forth in Slack here.
Janet, it's not anything. It's just dumb.
Guys, we have 7 news stories. We're 10 minutes into the show.
Let's start with story number 1. Nintendo contractors criticize the company culture and treatment. This is from Jeffrey Rousseau at GamesIndustry.biz. And this also comes, I should preface this with this comes off of a magnificent IGN report from Kat Bailey over there. She put out a report where she's talking to a bunch of different sources about what's been going on at Nintendo regarding contractors in the workplace environment. That is the full report. I'm pulling from GamesIndustry.biz just because it's more concise, but we will, me and Janet have both read the IGN article and we'll cite what's going on there as well. But to jump into GamesIndustry.biz, the company itself reported a turnover of 4.7% as of last year, as full-time employees commonly stay on for years or even decades. However, sources said contractors commonly exit the company in under a year. And again, this is them talking about Nintendo of America specifically. One source said, actually, hold on. Let me check something real quick, because I feel like this is the middle of the article and I don't think that's right. I'm going to go over to GamesIndustry.biz, scrolling back down, making sure this is all on the up and up. Okay, here we go. I'm just going to read directly from the website because I think something went wrong with the copy and paste. It reads like this. Contractors for Nintendo of America have described a growing sense of discontent due to the disparity between how the company treats themselves and its full-time workers, according to an IGN report in which the outlet spoke with a dozen current and former employee sources. For example, the publisher is reportedly reluctant to convert and or hire full-time staffers, which has resulted in no clear career path for contractors to become NOA employees and led to increased turnover for contractors as well. The company itself reported a turnover of 4.7% as of last year, as full-time employees commonly stay on for years or even decades. However, sources said contractors commonly exit the company in under a year. One source said a death in the family forced her to return home partway through an interview process for a full-time position, which led to the interviewer telling her she had, quote, attendance issues. IGN's report notes that some past business decisions that the company made were not well received among its staff, such as the unexpected shuttering of its Redwood City's office location. Quote, the sense that I got was that a lot of people were working from home successfully. Then Nintendo closed the Redwood City office and said none of you can stay in California. You have to move here or leave, a source told IGN. Quote, and that was just another nail in the coffin of the backward, antiquated way of thinking about a company, end quote. With regards to growing discontent, sources also said that part-timer restrictions to company events, activities, and even attendance policies have led them to feeling like second-class citizens. The report also includes comment from former Nintendo of America president Reggie Fils-Aimé, which IGN was interviewing separately about his new book. Fils-Aimé said that during his tenure at the firm, during his tenure, the firm had routinely hired contractors as full-timers. Quote, I've read the same stories, this division between contract and full-time employees. All I can say is that this is not at all the culture that I left as I retired from Nintendo, Fils-Aimé said. The IGN report follows 2 weeks after a similar report from Kotaku, which alleged that the Mario Maker maintained cyclical contract work for low wages, expected overtime, and a lack of benefits. Janet, again, that is the GamesIndustry.biz boil down of the IGN article. Is there more you want to add to this?
I think really just an emphasis on how much work, like at least from, you know, the report, like some of the quotes that were like brought up from like, you know, Bailey's, you know, reporting on it, specifically like people talking about the amount of work they did as contractors and that kind of feeling of, like, there's one line from somebody where they say, like, I was looking around and wondering, why am I not a red badge yet? You know, why am I a blue badge contractor if I'm kind of responsible for so many things? Talking about, I think, too, again, really emphasizing the strain that it puts on full-time employees by having such a heavy reliance on contract work to the point where there was, at one point, someone described it as there was, like, barely any time to even get, like, training from full-time employees. Like, it was at the point where it was just contractors, like, instructing other contractors because things were so busy. Talking about the challenges, I think, of having contractors having, like, required breaks after, like, really long projects, but then having to sort of shuffle around, okay, well, who's doing this coverage? Like, sort of the overall description of it sounded like it is kind of, I don't want to say, like, barely hanging on, 'cause that sounds super dramatic in terms of how, like, the infrastructure is run, but that there's not, at least they act as if there's not a lot of wiggle room in terms of getting the coverage needed. And then I think, too, like, the real big takeaway from this story is sort of, I think, the split between the Nintendo that we often hear about, which I, too, have, you know, heard the stat of how much retention they have compared to other companies, you know, 4.7%, like, I think is the turnover rate at, like, Nintendo America compared to, like, 13%, which is, like, the average at, you know, similar tech companies. But then you think of how much higher that turnover is for contractors. And, you know, overall, I think this does speak to just what we generally see, not just in contracting and tech, but I think also in freelance in general. A lot of times freelance workers, like, at least in my experience, like, having done, like, freelance in this industry, it is that, you know, you're there to fall on the sword to try and, like, keep things going for, like, the full-time employees that are there. Not to say that full-time automatically means that you don't have any problems at work or that you don't also struggle with, like, those work-life balance issues that are being described here. But yeah, and the truth is, like, a lot of people don't end up making it out, and then they end up just kind of, like, it does get really dark where you end up having these circumstances where companies are sort of just shuffling through different contractors, again, be it tech or other industries, which, you know, Kat put up a tweet thread after this kind of adding a couple additional notes and talking about, yeah, permacontractors, it is super common. I note that a lot in the article, but that has put a strain on, like, the full-time employee infrastructure. And then she ends by saying that she doesn't think that permacontracting is an inevitable fact in tech. I think, too, another thing that this article brings up for me is the idea of, like, almost like that, there's a TikTok audio that's been going around from, like, Parks and Rec of, like, who broke it? Like, what was the problem? That, you know, obviously, like, Reggie's out here talking about that's not the, you know, culture that he established. In Kat's reporting, it also goes into details of, like, even before he was hired, like, he was talking about the vision he had for how HR and how the company operated, and how important it was for him to, like, be able to execute his vision of creating, like, a better infrastructure for employees. But then it's also, like, brings in that question of, okay, well, then, like, who or what group of people are really at the helm of this problem? And, you know, what will it take to have that cultural shift? Is it true that the people in charge now just don't share that vision? Again, that's us kind of assuming that we just take it at face value of that Reggie says this and it's, you know, completely true and aligns, and that really is sort of the arc of the timeline here. But, you know, that being said, then it's, is there an end for this structure if people don't really care to end up changing it? And, you know, what does this mean for, like, I think the future of, like, Nintendo as a whole, especially in terms of getting new talent, where they have so many people that are there for so long and they seem so reluctant to end up hiring? You know, yeah, those are just kind of things that sort of ran through my mind reading through this, and getting to know more about the company outside of the, we have a great retention rate, people stay here for a bunch of years, everyone loves it, and, like, Mario's walking around, except he's not actually walking around, because I visited and he wasn't there, and I was very disappointed.
Oh, Mario wasn't there?
No, was Bowser. I was like, can I? It's like, I was like, hey, like, I was like, is Mario here? Like, I, like, want a picture with Mario, and then the person showing me around was,
you,
like,
you,
no.
You didn't really ask, is Mario here?
Yes, I did! Yes, I did, because I'm dumb, yeah. I mean, it was, like, a friend showing me around. It wasn't like I was just, you know, I would have asked anybody regardless. Like, you gotta ask your dumb questions. So I was like, is Mario around? Like, what's going on? And they're like, yeah, no, we only bring him out for... And Mario was missing. They're like, oh, we only bring him out for, like, kids situations. Like, you know, Mario's not coming out to see you.
Were you there, like, but, I am a kid, bring Mario out, I want to see
him. No, I was there, you know, interestingly enough, too, like, having visited, like, you know, they mentioned in this article, like, Cafe Mario, and how, well, that's, like, the cafeteria they have, and how, like, contractors, like, aren't allowed there. Again, I think one thing that I like about how this article, like, the full report is structured, is it does kind of, how it paints that picture of, like, the awesome campus with, like, you know, the soccer field and Cafe Mario and all these cool things. But then there's also, like, this other building where, like, the contractors are and how there is that divide. And I think elements of that divide are part of freelance versus full time. But it also speaks to, like, I think a deeper cultural and work-life balance and compensation divide that often exists.
Between like how you treat somebody who's a contractor versus how you treat somebody who's full time. And I think it becomes a problem when it is, cool, I'm a contractor, but now I'm basically a contractor full time because you guys aren't converting me into an actual full time employee. You're on the hook, and that does, and I think that's where things turn into a problem, right? Like, if you're a contractor for a month or 2 months or whatever, like, you know, this seems like it's a bit more traditional in terms of, okay, yeah, like, maybe I won't go to a company party, or maybe I won't be able to check out the soccer field or like the amenities that are available for full time employees, but when you're there for years and years and you are waiting to get converted into full time and that doesn't happen, I think that's where bigger problems lay, especially when you have more and more people that end up coming on as contractors. I think that becomes a problem. And to reference what you're referencing, right, in terms of how Kat Bailey sets the tone in her article, I want to read it because I think it is, like, it's beautifully written, and I think it does show the contrast real well, right? The article begins like this. And this is directly from IGN, again, from Kat Bailey. In 2010, Nintendo of America opened its brand new headquarters in Redmond, Washington, on a 10-acre plot owned by the company since the early 1980s. The late Satoru Iwata cut the ribbon on the state-of-the-art facility, alongside then-Washington State Governor Chris Gregoire, on a, quote, gleaming 300,000-square-foot facility with, quote, cushioned benches shaped like D-pads and a Mario Kart-themed parking garage. It was everything a Nintendo fan could imagine, right down to the main boardroom being known as the Master Sword. Across the way, past a soccer pitch of the sort one often sees on West Coast tech campuses, is a much older building that isn't nearly as well known. A former warehouse that houses a hodgepodge of departments ranging from data science to product testing and development. It, in some ways, harkens back to the days when NOA was simply an arcade distributor operating out of New Jersey. The warehouse doors are still visible, and the freight elevator near the greeting desk will sometimes get stuck open and make loud grinding noises. While Nintendo has spruced up the decoration with some Mario-themed diagrams, it's otherwise a nondescript work area with an atmosphere akin to a library. In contrast to the ultra-modern facilities nearby, many of the workers are toiling away on outdated equipment and software, with software that looks like it's running on Windows XP and a database that dates back to the 90s. Until just a few years ago, it was still possible to find bins of old VHS tapes filled with bug recordings in the PTD area. Secrecy, constant software crashes, and the ever-present need for translation of messages from the Japanese headquarters frequently slows work to a crawl. A large percentage of the workers inhabiting this building are contractors, many of whom increasingly see themselves as second-class citizens with no hope of earning one of the coveted red badges that can grant them unfettered access to the building just across the way, or even just the soccer pitch, which is also off-limits. The building doesn't just represent more comfort, it stands for job security, career progression, and even a basic professional respect that many contractors don't feel in their day-to-day life at the company. As I was reading through, and this is me jumping out of Kat Bailey's article and just talking now, right? As I was reading through this article, it reminded me so much of my previous job working at Starbucks. Because, like, technically, right, I started off as a contractor working for, not actually Starbucks, working for a real estate company that was contracted by Starbucks. So basically, I was a contractor for a contracted company. And as I was reading through this, I was like, man, I relate so hard to so much of this, right? Like, having to, for the first, like, month of working there, right, having to call up a supervisor to let me in right before I was I eventually was able to get a badge, not showing up to company events, right? And that went on for, I want to say, like, 9 months to a year. And even that felt like a very long time. And it was. And that was partly because the contracting company that I worked for, not the company that was contracted by Starbucks, but the one that hired me to then get me hired at the contracting company, wasn't really a great one, right? Like, it costed them money to eventually buy me out of my contract to then be able to work for that. You lose out on, as a worker, right? You lose out on so many of the perks, so many of the amenities, so many of the things that makes working at a place like this worth working at a place like that, right? And I think the feeling of being a second-class citizen is very much the accurate description of what that feels like. And I could definitely feel that, especially if it is the thing of, hey, I am doing legitimate work, right? Like, then this is me again talking about the folks at Nintendo, right? It sounds like a lot of these contractors are doing legitimate work. It sounds like they are doing things that are necessary, from localization to QA to like marketing to like actual jobs that would warrant you being brought onto the team after a while. And it seems like them not getting hired feeds into this big snowball effect that affects other things. In the article, they talk about how after like 11 or so months, you then have to take 2 months off as a contractor, or else that breaches your contract, right? And so with that, what that means is for those 2 months that you're off, somebody else has to pick up that work. Yep. And that is fucking up processes, right? Like that is fucking up people's bandwidth. That is fucking up like times a day. Like that is fucking up a lot of things in terms of that process. That is a very small way that that affects the rest of the team and the production of the team, right? Beyond just like certain employees not being able to be brought on full time. It's a very fascinating article that I recommend anybody go check out if you're even curious about this stuff at Nintendo. And I think the other thing too, to add on to it, to bring it back top level, one of the big reasons I find this article or this report fascinating is the fact that we never hear this shit about Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Like Nintendo, talking to people in the industry, Nintendo has always seemed like the one company that doesn't get reported on in this way because they have had such a clean track record, and maybe it has been that so much of it has just been hidden, right? They do such a good job at hiding the stuff that goes on. But compared to like Ubisoft, we hear this stuff all the time, right? EA, we hear this stuff all the time. Activision, like all that stuff is pouring out in terms of the stuff that gets reported there in terms of workplace conduct and culture and all that stuff. And granted, like I think this contractor situation is a stark contrast from like the Activision Blizzard abuse that goes on there, right? Completely different story about what's going on here. But Nintendo is usually very buttoned up. So it's very fascinating to see this report come out and actually grant a glimpse into what actually goes on there.
Yeah, and then just really quick before we move on, I just want to like highlight a couple other quick things from the article. The conversation around like the localization team specifically and like how that demand has nearly doubled, you know, reportedly, but there haven't been any full-time hires in contrast to like the Pokemon company, which like now has their own localization team that's full-time. And again, it's like the thing that ends up becoming like too, like you never want that disconnect between contractor and full-time staff to be like too big in terms of numbers, because like contractors should be used as their kind of what the idea is of them, where it's like, hey, we need some extra help.
Yeah, or so like, it's supposed to be a way to supplement. Like I remember reading an article years ago from, I think it was from Reggie, actually. I believe it was Reggie's interview with Waypoint when he was exiting from Nintendo. And they were talking about how Nintendo avoids crunch, right? How does Nintendo, when all these other video game companies struggle with crunch and struggle with meeting deadlines and all that stuff, how does Nintendo do it? And Reggie always talked about, yeah, we hire up, right? Like we don't force our workers to stay overtime to like get a thing done. Instead, we hire contractors for a period of time, right? And like that doesn't mean you hire them on full time and then not bring them on, right? It doesn't mean you keep them on for 3 years or whatever. It does mean you hire them on for the months or however long you need to get that project done, and then like you either hire them on full time or you let them go. That's the way that I think contractors should be used, right? As a tool, not necessarily as something to lean on full time.
And then it ends up being like such a problem, I think. And again, some of this is me speaking from like my experiences of seeing like freelancers in the industry and how, because again, it's a lot of the same like ideologies of like pulling in extra help, where they'll be there. It's like it gets to that point where they're like, well, we like you for being a contractor, and we're just never really going to hire. Why would I want to pay the extra to give you like, you know, so many more expenses that go into like an employee than just their salary? You know, there's like all the additional contracts, there's the healthcare, there's like, why should I like make this official? I already have all that I need from you and maybe even more. So it's like you have all the responsibilities and the weight. I think too with contracting, it's so challenging in that you are often, again, the sort of, I don't want to say last resort because that sounds like kind of inherently negative, but it's like we need the extra help. So like we're relying on you. There's like an extra weight, I think, that goes into contracting that doesn't get talked about enough. And again, there is that outside of maybe even like explicit cultural pressure to do more. There's the internal one of like, I want to be the absolute best worker I can be, and I don't want to miss anything because like I'm trying to get hired. Like I'm chasing, trying to get that full-time position, and you know, they're going to, I don't want to be the weakest link here. So there is that pressure to like take on everything. I mean, like when I was freelancing at a much more extreme rate, like I had to work for everything. You know, I was the one working during Thanksgiving because that's how the employees got their time off. Like I was, you know, like I had to do that. And that's just kind of the way of like how those industries have to function, because obviously like sometimes you might need coverage and those situations might come up. I don't think that's like necessarily the most egregious thing, but I think there are examples of the ways that like in general tech or writing, like freelancers are often making and contractors are making a lot of sacrifices. And yes, the goal is for that mobility. And without that mobility, there becomes stagnation, burnout, and it just becomes a really bad situation, I think, for everyone kind of involved. So, you know, I think hopefully from this, we see a general better treatment of contractors, both at Nintendo and also throughout the industry. It'll be interesting to see too, like what really comes of this, because one of the things the article talks about is, you know, how much is Nintendo like aware, or do they care about like the reportings that have been happening, in addition to like the IGN one, of course, is the Kotaku reports and all the other ones. And they mentioned like in the article, like employees thinking, oh, I wonder, like, has Japan heard about this? And if so, what do they think? So I think it'll be the interesting thing is, because Nintendo is so like quiet and secretive, like, I don't know how much more of a follow-up we'll really get on this story specifically, but, you know, hopefully if nothing else, we see them start to shift towards more of those full-time positions, and, you know, maybe this does end up making the splash.
I think for Nintendo, who is so precious about their like perception, how people perceive them, like what they're like, especially for Nintendo America, that is like beholden to what's going on in Japan, right? Like, they want to be the darling, they want to be the sweetheart, they want to be folks that are known for like excellence, right? And I think for how rare these reports are, because I think there is such this like culture of secrets at Nintendo, but then also like it seems like they tend to operate above the board most of the time, and that's me very much like anecdotally just looking at them compared to like what I hear about Nintendo versus what I hear about other companies. I would think that them seeing this would cause some level of shift or some level of self-reflection. But that said, right, like, it seems like for what the problem is, it's going to take a large ship turning, right? It's going to take a lot of effort to figure out what to do with all these contractors that they have and the workflow that they have, because redefining your workflow is difficult. That is not an easy thing to do when you have all these people and you have something that may or may not work for you. I also think the interesting thing would be to look at how this happens, right? Like, how do you get to this place? And there, I want to go back to the Kat Bailey article for one more thing I want to reference here, because she does have a segment here that talks about like the shift that happened around 2015 for Nintendo. So to hop in back into the middle of the article, and again, I 1000% recommend, if you are fascinated with the story, go to the IGN article. It is long, but it is a very good read. Kat Bailey absolutely killed it. But jumping into the middle of it, where she talks about changing times for Nintendo, it reads like this. Most employees IGN spoke with agree that Nintendo of America's culture started to shift around 2015. It was a particularly tumultuous period in Nintendo's history, noted for the struggles of the Wii U and the sudden death of CEO Satoru Iwata. It was a sharp contrast to the opening of the new NOA headquarters just 5 years before, when the company was still enjoying the double success of the Nintendo DS and Nintendo Wii, two of the biggest bets in Nintendo history. Jen, a former contractor who was at Nintendo for 10 years, remembers both of these eras. Speaking with IGN over Zoom, she talks about how there were many opportunities to become a full-time employee at NOA when she first started, even for support specialists working in areas like the call center. Quote, when I was there, contractors actually had a path to employment. In 2009, you could be a phone rep and an NOA Red Badger, and I started aiming for that. And I aimed pretty high, trying to get as many cases as possible, Jen says. Business was booming for Nintendo in 2009. In December alone, Nintendo sold some 3 million Wii consoles, fueled by a price cut earlier that year. Nintendo's big bet on motion controls and the Blue Ocean had paid off spectacularly, but the good times would soon be coming to an end for Nintendo. The Nintendo 3DS was released in 2011 and immediately stalled, burdened by the lack of compelling launch lineup, the rise of smartphones, and the $249.99 price point. Nintendo was forced to move aggressively, slashing the system's price and ruling out special benefits for existing owners. A year later, Nintendo released the Wii U, which fared even worse. Despite the downturn, no one at NOA worried too much about layoffs. Nintendo was not that kind of company. In fact, Iwata famously took a 50% pay cut following the 3DS's sluggish launch, with other board members also taking similar pay decreases. Quote, I know that some employers publicized a restructuring plan to improve their financial performance by letting a number of employees go, but at Nintendo, employees make valuable contributions in their respective fields. So I believe that laying off a group of employees will not help to strengthen Nintendo's business in the long run, Iwata told investors back in 2013. excuse me. They go on to like talk about a lot of what Iwata was doing there, right? And they mentioned that like that was pretty much the start of the shift, right? After the passing of Iwata, after the downturn that you saw with the Wii U and the launch of the 3DS, and the 3DS would eventually go on to sell way more units, it seemed like that caused a shift in terms of how the company started to look at money and hiring. And right now, it seems from the article, the sentiment is, hey, like, we do not have a lot of space to hire on full time. Like, that is why we go with contractors, because we do want to kind of hold the line and not hire on a bunch of people to pay them and have to treat them like full time folks when we can just have contractors on. So again, I point you toward the article if you want to learn more. But Janet, before we move on, do you have any final thoughts on the story?
Think so. I think the final thought I want to leave is it's always important to, I think, be wary and also aware that like every company is going to have its problems, and that like hopefully this doesn't come as like a crazy shock to people, the idea that there would be anything negative to say about Nintendo.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not to say that this means that, oh, like it's no big deal because everyone has problems, but just to say that like never take those things at face value in terms of, oh yeah, this is like a great place to work and everything's great and like there's low turnover, like everything's gonna have like its different issues, and it's of no surprise that like this would be a pain point. You know, no, hopefully we also like hear more about, I guess, like the contractor side of things. Like obviously I know like there's a big difference between full-time and contracting, but I think every, you know, I'm of the mind that like every worker should be treated with, you know, respect and given like, you know, a path to being full-time and also having like transparency and like what their, you know, path in their career is. That's like an ideal situation. So, you know, hopefully maybe we hear more about this from like other companies and how they approach contracting, and that becomes like another, I think, pillar for trying to move workers' rights forward in the industry.
100%. Janet, I want to take a break for a second to let people out there know that you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Shout out to ExpressVPN for sponsoring this episode. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like walking your dog in public without securing them on a leash. Most of the time, you'll probably be fine, but what if one day your dog runs away or gets dognapped? It's better to be careful, especially when it's as simple as using ExpressVPN. We've been using ExpressVPN here at Kinda Funny for years now. Me personally, I've been using it, and I know that my internet browsing is secure. It just gives me that peace of mind that I need. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network in cafes, hotels, airports, your online data is not secure, but ExpressVPN creates a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet so they can't, and it's great. I use it on my desktop. I use it on my phone. I use it everywhere that I use the internet. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. You can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. That's expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. Shout out to Chime for sponsoring this episode. No one likes waiting on a paycheck, especially when you've got bills due. Good thing there's Chime. Now you can get your paycheck up to 2 days early with direct deposit. That's up to 2 more days to save, pay bills, and generally just feel good about your money situation. But Chime is more than just about getting paid early. It's also an award-winning mobile app, checking account, debit card, and optional savings account. So, what are you waiting for? Hopefully not your paycheck. You can get started with Chime today. Applying for a free account takes less than 2 minutes. You can get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. chime.com/kfgames. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank NA, members FDIC. Early access to direct deposit funds depends on hair. Shout out to Babbel for sponsoring this episode. For most of us, learning a second language in high school or college wasn't exactly a high point in our academic careers. Definitely not me. I took Spanish, didn't do well in it the first time, did okay the second time. You know what? We'll move on. Now, thanks to Babbel, a language learning app that's sold more than 10 million subscriptions, there's an addictively fun and easy way to learn a new language. Whether you'll be traveling abroad, connecting in a deeper way with family, or you just have some free time, Babbel teaches bite-sized language lessons that you'll actually use in the real world. Greg Miller has been learning French little by little, and now when he goes back home to Canada to see Jen's family, he'll be able to communicate better. Isn't that a lovely situation? Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Right now, you can save up to 60% off your subscription when you go to babbel.com/kindoffunny. That's babbel.com/kindoffunny for up to 60% off your subscription. Babbel, language for life. One more time, babbel.com/kindoffunny.
Jana, let's talk about story number two. Blizzard has discussed Overwatch 2 updates. This is Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Excuse me. Blizzard has shared, I like almost choked for a second. I don't know if you saw that, Jane. Blizzard has shared early impressions of the Overwatch 2 beta and outlined what changes are coming as a result of player feedback. The biggest change is coming to support heroes, with Blizzard accepting feedback that there's much more interesting new content for tank and damage players to explore. Quote, we believe the most effective way to tackle this issue is to add exciting new support heroes to the game, Blizzard said in a blog post. The development team is also working on updating current support heroes, though, similar to how Doomfist and Orisa received reworks, which could be added to this beta, but will more likely be inclusions in later testing periods. Blizzard also confirmed that more brand new heroes will be joining Sojourn ahead of the official PvP launch, alongside more maps and features. The beta's UI, including menus, player profiles, and so on, will also receive a, quote, significant amount of overall polish and refinement ahead of the final release. The refreshed scoreboard, which removed both the fire and metal systems from Overwatch 1 and presents stats more traditionally, will be staying put. But Blizzard has further tweaks planned. Quote, a damage mitigated section will be added to track things like the amount of damage blocked or reduced by abilities, including Ana's Nano Boost and Baptiste Immortality Field. Blizzard also clarifies that, like the overall UI, the current scoreboard is not final and the development team is regularly testing different styles and layouts. Finally, major changes are coming to ranked play, but Blizzard didn't give much information about what these will be. Quote, we're planning some significant overhauls of our core ranked and competitive mode systems, end quote. It said, but those are not yet ready to test publicly at this scale. Janet, what is your vibe on Overwatch 2? It's been a week since the beta started.
I don't know. I feel like I have not had a lot of noise about it across my timeline, but again, that might speak to like who I follow versus the game itself. It's interesting to see that they're like going to be rolling out updates even just for this beta. I mean, they did mention that like some of these things that they want to rework will be included in later testing periods, which also like begs the question of like how many, you know, what does the pre-launch rollout of this game look like in terms of like additional betas and testing? And, you know, at what point are they going to have those elements solidified? But I think it's cool to see them kind of immediately implementing that feedback. And hopefully it's not, I think, too taxing, because they're also working on, you know, I'm imagining the final build like of the, you know, version one, even though they might have the version names differently, but like the day one version of the game, you know, the commercial day one version of the game. So hopefully they're not, you know, stretching themselves too thin, trying to like work on this beta while they're also working on like the final product as well. Granted, those go hand in hand, so it's not like that work is for nothing, but getting those things out and working and all of that, I'm sure can be like strenuous in its own right. So, you know, hopefully they're finding that good balance between the two. But yeah, like, what about you? Like, do these updates excite you? Like, what was your read on that initial time that you spent with the game so far? And, you know, what is your plan leading up to the launch? Are you planning on like tuning into like all these betas and play tests, or are you just gonna, you know, kind of at a certain point drop off and come back when it's finally like the, you know, final version of the game, the day one version of the game rather?
I'm surprised that I've already dropped off of the beta. Like, the beta is going for a while, right? I think it goes until about May 17th. And I played for that first couple of days, and I've not gone back since. And I had a lot of fun for those first couple of days. But I do think that the game still needs a lot more for it to feel like something way more fresh and way more new. I like the fact that they're talking about new characters. I think that's going to be big, because I think Sojourn is a great start. But you're going to need way more than just one new character. And they are reworking other characters, right? They talk about how, like, they reworked Orisa and Doomfist. They're going to rework some of the support heroes as well. I think that'll be needed. Like, playing the game, especially for me, as I was playing a lot of my time as support, I was going back and forth between Mercy and Lucio. Both those characters feel the exact same as they did before. Like, they're barely any different. And I think with that, if you're a support player, that means that the game feels less new to you compared to if you're a tank and you played as Doomfist, or you're a tank and you played as Sojourn, or you played as Orisa as a tank too. Like, a lot of the changes are on certain ends of the game, and it feels like they are. It feels like, and this is me speculating, right? I think as a beta that seems to be earlier, right? Because I don't think the game is on the verge of coming out in the next few months. I think this is them trying to really gain feedback and trying to really figure out how to grow the game from here. I think the 5v5 shift is good. I think the one tank, two support, two DPS balance, I think, is good. I think the reworks that they made to the characters are good. I think they could use a lot more of that, and I think they know. And I think that's why you see the beta happening this early, is because they're really trying to figure out, like how does the game play when it is in everybody's hands versus just a handful? Because you really can't judge when it's only in a few people's hands. Like, you really have to have people play it, break it, test it, figure out who's OP, figure out who to adjust. Like, you really need to have so many people on this thing for a game as big as it is, and for a game that I think from the get-go, by Overwatch 2 launch, like, you're not going to have the time to really experiment in the way that Overwatch 1 launched, and there wasn't ranked, right? Like, obviously there wasn't Overwatch League. They didn't have this huge like competitive aspect to it, and so they had time to launch it and have people go, cool, let's get a team of 6 Torbjorns and go all turrets and go crazy, right? Let's find the ways that we can break the game. That's not a big deal at the start of Overwatch 1 because it's still a brand new game. They've yet to establish that. Whereas Overwatch 2, I don't think that by the time you put out Overwatch 2, it is all hands on deck. We're going hard. We're competitive from the get-go. We're thinking about Overwatch League from the get-go. We're thinking about it in those ways. And I think you want to have people test it as much as possible before it actually comes out. And so I'm happy to see, like, they're already talking about the kinds of changes that they're thinking about. The UI stuff I'm into as well. Like, I like how the UI looks now, but, you know, I think there's always room for improvement when it comes to stuff like that, especially for the scoreboard, which, you know, the scoreboard is brand new. Like the article mentioned, right, they used to have the metal system and the on fire system. And even though I like that, right, like, I think them leaning towards the scoreboard is them trying to be a bit more focused on competitive and a bit more traditional. And I think for the kind of game Overwatch is, you have to have a bit more info there aside from like eliminations and heals, right? I think you do have to have damage mitigated and other things like that to really reflect how people play Overwatch, because each role really, it does have a different role, right? Like if you're a tank, kills might not matter as much, right? Heals probably don't matter at all, but damage mitigated could matter, right? Like, there are so many other elements that, like, time on the point could matter. Things like that, I think, should be reflected a bit more accurately and balanced on the scoreboard. And so, like, I like hearing about this. I think it's very fascinating. And this is me making the transition to story number 3, which is also Overwatch. It's fascinating coming off of this story from Paul Tassi at Forbes, who writes, Overwatch 2 has lost 99% of its Twitch audience in a week. His article reads like this. The Overwatch 2 beta launched last week, a pivot of the original plan for the game, which was going to be a grand release of both a multiplayer overhaul and single player content. But Blizzard has decided the multiplayer revamp needed to be pushed live sooner so the game can go back to getting updates again. And for a moment there, it looked like Overwatch was set to have a massive resurgence in popularity. But a week makes quite a difference. And gamers have a short attention span if they're not kept engaged. Overwatch 2 absolutely shattered records with 1.5 million concurrent viewers on Twitch, boosted partially by people wanting to check out more or less every big-name streamer on the platform playing the game, while others were motivated by beta access drops that were going on during streams so they could get in themselves. But that enthusiasm seems to have been short-lived. About a week after the record was set, Overwatch has lost 99% of those viewers. At the time of this writing, viewership is down from the peak of 1.5 million to 15,000. And after I read that, I was like, let me check out to see where Overwatch is at right now. And even right before I checked, right before we started the show, it was at like 17,500. So like not too far away from that. Granted, it's off hours, but that still puts it outside the top 20 most watched games on Twitch and indicates that no, we probably will not see Overwatch routinely among the top games again, given that most big streamers went back to their usual fare, be that Fortnite, CSGO, Valorant, League of Legends, Apex Legends, Warzone, etc. And I think this is interesting to look at coming off of our conversation that me and you, Jana, had last week on KFG. I think it was Wednesday, where we were talking about how, like, yo, is Overwatch back? Like, Overwatch is killing it in terms of viewers. And both of us mentioned that, well, they do have the Twitch drops, and that is bringing in a large amount of people because people want access to the beta. And then also there's the fact that when all the big streamers are streaming Overwatch, that just means that the viewer is going to be crazy because, like, a lot of people are watching for the streamers as opposed to just the game itself. So I think that combination leads to having 1.5 million viewers at that time. But that said, right, this is a crazy drop. This is an insane drop. And I don't know if I'm all the way with Paul Tassi where he mentions that, like, Overwatch is not going to have a resurgence, right? Like, it is an indication of no, like, Overwatch is not going to hang in the top. But I do think it's an indication of where the beta is at right now. The beta does, and I think I mentioned this last week too, that the beta, while playing it, while streaming it, the most common question/comment that I got in my chat and we got in the Kind of Funny chat is this not just Overwatch 1? This looks exactly like Overwatch 1. Like, what's the difference with Overwatch 2? So much of it feels so iterative in a way that I think leads to it feeling less interesting at this moment. I think they could get there. I think once they add, like, even single player stuff aside, once we see those new characters, once we see more updates, once we see more polish, once we see more, like, UI updates, I think we could get to the place where Overwatch feels interesting enough to maintain past a first week of viewership. But I think right now with where the Overwatch 2 update is at for the beta, it's just not as interesting, right? It doesn't feel like this brand new crazy ass thing.
Yeah, and I definitely think like this, I mean, it is a very stark drop off, but I would more so argue that, like you mentioned earlier, like our conversation last week, that was more of the anomaly is not the drop off. The anomaly was like the initial spike. And like, yeah. I think when you have a spike that high, like the drop off is going to be inevitable because, yeah, it's the statistically, it's like, you know, a macro version of like, you know, you stream. So I'm sure you have like these moments if you ever like look at your analytics after like you get an email, sometimes it'll be like, oh, an 800% increase in like a subscribe. You know, if you happen to have like, oh, I had two the day before. So now that I have like however many, yeah. like it's a huge boom. And then likewise, well, funny enough, when like those bot things are sending you your stats, they only send you like the positive stats instead of like negative whatever.
You dropped off 900%.
Yeah. Like you're like destitute at this point. Like, but they have similar fluctuations. And I think this is just an extreme version of that kind of spike and drop where, yeah, people were there because they wanted to get into the beta. They were there because the people they normally watch were playing it. You know, I'm sure when Overwatch 2 launches, whether or not that game is going to be super critically acclaimed or, you know, warning the sequel, like it's going to view like crazy because people are interested in checking it out to see what it's about. But yeah, like, I don't think that it necessarily is an indictment on the game itself, but I will say like so much of the conversation that I'm seeing that you've already pointed out and like here, you know, in the chat right now is how is like, you know, this feels like they just put the number 2 onto like the game title. Like, it doesn't feel iterative enough. It doesn't feel like it's moving things forward. And that is the number one thing I feel like they have working against themselves because again, they were in that like in between of there was support for such a long time for this game and it was kind of like accepted and known as an ongoing game that mm-hmm. how do you make a switch from being an ongoing game to being a franchise that's not going to feel too stagnated? And like we, you know, in terms of like criticism, like we like talk about stagnation and innovation all the time, even in more traditional games that are like single player, like how is, you know, Horizon 2 innovating enough? Is it innovating enough? Do we feel like this is pushing things for, you know, the Ratchet series, we talk about that all the time. I think it's even more exacerbated in a game like Overwatch where there are people that play this game like every day all the time. And it being a little bit different isn't going to feel as big of a leap because that difference can be felt in the updates for the existing game. Like that's, it's hard to, I think, make that jump while still letting it feel like what people are there for. And I'm not really sure what they're gonna do about that challenge or maybe at the end of the day, that doesn't matter and that'll be the conversation piece, but it won't actually be reflected in the critical acclaim or the sales or the play time. You know, we'll just have to kind of see how it all shakes out. But I do think that is like a very loud conversation. That doesn't mean that conversation will be substantiated, but that is like the loudest noise I hear from the beta as well.
Yeah, I think for a lot of it for Overwatch, it'll be a wait and see thing, right? Like how do they update it? Does it feel brand new? Does it feel iterative? And I think even if it does feel iterative, right, like is the iteration enough to keep that audience going and to keep like things like Overwatch League still vibrant and exciting? And I think again, going back to the Twitch numbers, right, I think like Overwatch League being off season right now, I think does a lot for that as well, where when Overwatch League is active after Overwatch 2, that's going to be crazy. That's going to be a crazy time and it's going to pop off. But does that sustain? Does Overwatch 2 bring enough to the table where even with that, even Overwatch League feels like it's something brand new, exciting, and something you want to stick along with? We'll have to wait and see. But one more for Blizzard, story number 4. Blizzard has finally revealed its long-awaited mobile game. This is Casey David Muir Taylor at IGN. Get ready to rumble in Blizzard's long-rumored Warcraft mobile game. Warcraft ArcLight Rumble was revealed today for iOS and Android. The game invites players to build up an army of their favorite heroes and villains from the World of Warcraft universe and duke it out in a series of tactical-based battles. The game takes place in Azeroth, where Warcraft ArcLight Rumble is sweeping through taverns and inns thanks to some clever gnomish engineering. Players will collect miniatures of famous World of Warcraft characters and build forces to overcome frantic challenges. Blizzard developers call it a, quote, mobile strategy, fast-paced hero and villain collector with a vast PvE campaign, end quote. They also say they were inspired by tower defense games, but ArcLight Rumble is more of a tower offense game. Players will choose a leader like Archmage Jaina Proudmoore and fill in the rest of their team with troops and powerful spells. ArcLight Rumble offers more than 70 single-player missions to adventure through. If journeying alongside a friend is your preference, you can play co-op or even go head-to-head in competitive player versus player modes. Players will even be able to join guilds. Janet, are you ready to join a guild in ArcLight Rumble?
I am not ready to join the Gilded Arc Light Realm, but it, like, I think this story, it's one of those like situations where, again, there's like that chasm between, I think, like the, you know, hardcore gaming audience, and by that I mean like people that really stay up like on the news, that are like really, you know, watching E3 or fake E3 or Summer of Gaming or whatever, like that kind of audience, still is very not, like, at least vocally not interested. They might still, like, you know, download stuff, but like there's that gap between like mobile and like console versus like PC and all that, of people just like not being interested in mobile games, even though mobile gaming is an intensely huge market. So yeah, you know, it makes sense for them to expand to this. I don't know that this will necessarily be like what the quality level of this in terms of a game of like critical acclaim or not is, but you know, it makes sense that they're moving into that market, and you know, we'll see if that audience is interested in having a mobile experience, or if this will just be a way to maybe build out a new audience and try to like do the inverse, because it's servicing one, two, or both audiences, like ideally, where it's either the hardcore people who like this series following it anywhere, including mobile, or people that play on mobile being like, oh, I guess I'll check out, I don't, you know, the WoW that I play is the mobile one, and maybe, you know, acquiring people that way. So we'll just have to see. But I ultimately, I'm not the biggest fan of, just in general, like mobile iterations on franchises that exist outside of mobile, just because I don't feel like they usually are done in a way that is super compelling to me based on what I normally like about the base franchise.
I feel that. Yeah, like if one, we talked about them, the like Sony mobile initiative that they've been working on, or at least been hiring people on for. And like once they announced, the reference I made earlier was Kratos Run. Once they announced Kratos Run, I don't know if I'm going to play that game, but like, you know.
Oh, you have to, because we have to talk about it. Like, I mean, at least for like a whole minute.
The thing
like,
I
want to
do
the
least is play a mobile game. Like, I am so like uninterested. What? But, you know,
is it because your phone gets too hot? Because I understand, because the phone does get hot.
I already have uses for my phone. I text people, you know, like I watch TikTok. Like, I don't want to be on my phone for video games. Like, Janet, that's what the Steam Deck is for.
Look, just slot your phone into
no, blessing. I need you to stop it. I need you to fucking stop it, okay?
I was playing Rogue Legacy 2 on
Steam
this thing
right
yesterday.
Here, where it's just the backbone. I'm like, just slot the phone to the backbone. It's a little.
Also,
little
I appreciate Roger
twist.
In the chat saying, nobody texting you, bless, be real.
I mean, you're not wrong. You don't have to say it. You know, you don't have to say it. But
the
like,
line
I mean,
is dry as hell, blessing. Like, what is
the line
these
is so dry?
It's just
ridiculous.
DoorDash being like, "Hey, here's an offer coupon."
Is there a way I can block DoorDash? Because DoorDash texts me and emails me like five emails.
See,
per,
how did
per
I
order.
Know though? How did I know? There is, but like, it's gonna be hard to get out of. But yeah, the point is, we're probably not the target audience for this, but we'll see.
I'm not the target audience for this. I do think that there is a target audience. Like, for me, this is them trying to replicate the success of Hearthstone, but in a different genre. Like, Hearthstone was so popular, and Hearthstone had like the same thing where it was spinoff of World of Warcraft. I think it had like a similar premise of people would play this in taverns, similar to this. And so like, I think this is them trying to create another one of those. Is it gonna hit as much as that? We'll see. Like, this seems like it is leaning more, way more into the mobile side of things. Like Hearthstone, you know, when I first played Hearthstone, I played it on PC and it felt like playing a PC game. Then they eventually brought it to mobile and it felt at home there as well. This seems like something that is like, nah, man, the mobile market is, this is for the mobile market. This is for that crowd. And we'll see if it hits. Like, I don't, it's hard for me to have doubt in Blizzard launches like this when I've seen such success with their other stuff.
Really quick before we move on to the next story, Barry pulling from chat, Lanky Dragoon, blessing, gets an app notification while my phone is blowing up.
Yeah, every time DoorDash texts me five times in a row. Damn, man. Well, who's hitting my line? I check it. It's just DoorDash. It's Stevie. I'm just going to rename the contact to DoorDash in my phone to try and trick people. Be like, oh, yeah, the line is blowing up. Dee Dee's hollering at me.
Yeah,
it's Dee Dee.
Yeah, just put Bay. Just put Bay.
Yeah. It's like somebody picks up my phone and is like, why is Bay telling you that your order's at the door? It's like, don't worry about that. That's code. Story number five, Bungie has spoken out in support of Roe v. Wade. This comes from a press release on their website. And this is Bungie's words, right? At Bungie, we believe that everyone has a right to choose their own path and that freedom is expressed across all facets of life. The leaked draft decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade represents a blow to freedom in America and is a direct attack on human rights. By creating a divide between those who possess the fundamental right to make healthcare decisions that are right for them and those who do not possess that same freedom, this decision, should it become final, will have far-reaching consequences that will be felt for generations across socioeconomic lines. Bungie is committed to safeguarding the freedom and privacy of its employees and providing support to all employees who are affected by this decision. Standing up for reproductive choice and liberty is not a difficult decision to make, and Bungie remains dedicated to upholding these values. If you would like to donate to organizations that support rights to healthcare, these are a few you might consider. And then they go on to list URGE, which is Unite for Reproductive and Gender Equity, Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, there's NARL, Pro-Choice American Foundation, and then In Our Own Voice. Go get them, Bungie. This is awesome. I don't know if there's been any other, in the last like few days, right, any other big, at least company on the gaming side, that has been as vocal about it. And so I love seeing Bungie come out and be like, nah, we're doing this. And it's even more awesome saying that, like, they're on Twitter replying to folks who are like, no, we don't want this. And like, they're very much being like, no, we stand by this. Like, it's a concern to us because it's a concern to our employees, right? This is a thing that that affects the women and people that work for the company. And so we want to support them. But yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, hopefully we see more companies like speak out again about this kind of thing. Obviously, there's always going to be like so much debate about an issue like this. But yeah, I think for me, the answer is obvious in terms of support of Roe v. Wade, just in terms of like having your right to doing what you're going to do with your body. You know, I've mentioned plenty of times, and I don't have like a lot new to add, but that this being an issue that statistically impacts women primarily, not exclusively, but like it's a women's rights issue historically, that I think is why it's so constantly under attack. And it's really unfortunate, you know, and I'm glad that they are willing to speak on something that is a little bit more on the controversial side of things versus like, there's been plenty of companies that have spoken out in support of things like, you know, if there's like a natural disaster or something going on and say, you know, putting aid there, and I think those are all good and well as well, and they take their own kinds of effort and organization. But I think taking a stance like this is, even though I feel like it's the obvious answer, it is a little bit on the bolder side for a company to do, and I respect them for doing it and seeing it as, you know, part of supporting their workers in a sense. You know, I do think that debates are kind of inevitable in situations like this, but at the same time, for me, the reason I feel like this is an obvious answer is because when you look at just the human element, the freedom element of it, there's only one answer available to you, regardless, I think, of what your like background and personal beliefs are, and just in terms of like how legislation should be. So yeah, shout out to them. I hope we see more of it.
Hell yeah. Story number 6, Hitman 3's game director has joined Crytek. This is Ryan Dinsdale over at the Dinsdale Demodome, aka at IGN. Hitman 3 director Matthias Engstrom has left IO Interactive to direct Crysis 4 at Crytek Studios. The official Crysis Twitter account shared the news, saying Engstrom was joining the team this week to lead the new Crysis game. While he was only a game director at IO Interactive for 3 years, Engstrom spent much longer at the studio, having worked there since 2014. He previously spent almost 10 years at Massive Entertainment from 2004 to 2014, while the studio was developing games such as Assassin's Creed Revelations and Far Cry 3. Very little is known about the new Crysis game. Crytek teased it with a brief trailer in January following a leak online, with CEO Avni Yerli saying Crysis 4 is in, quote, the early stages of development, so it'll be a while yet, end quote. And yeah, it seems like with them hiring on a game director, it is very early. That's first and foremost. But then also, congratulations to Matthias Engstrom. That's a good game director to have, right? Like, Hitman, yeah. The Hitman games are excellent, especially when you're talking about like pure game design. Like, the design of those games are so good and so solid. And so, like, that's a good person to have on your team. I got so many questions about what Crysis 4 is going to be. Like, is that going to run on my Steam Deck, Barrett? This thing that got in the mail yesterday that I've been loving nonstop. You see this, Barrett? It's a Steam Deck.
First of all, go fuck yourself, and also, yeah. No.
Yeah.
Doesn't I?
Jan, does this excite you?
Not in the sense that, like, I'm not necessarily, like, a Crysis person, but, like, I, you know, probably would check it out when it eventually drops. And I do think, you know, I'm definitely a fan of Hitman 3 that was, like, in my top 10 for the year last year, throughout the whole year. And I feel like that game doesn't get praised enough. But, yeah, like, I think that seems like a good way to stack out the team, and we'll see if it actually, like, comes to fruition in terms of being something that is, you know, a dope game when it actually launches. Because obviously, like, just because you have, you know, great people at the helm doesn't necessarily mean that the product will end up being like,
yeah,
the best thing ever, but it's a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you're hiring people on to work on a project that you've already greenlit, right? Like, maybe in the Crysis, like, I think the thing that Crysis has going for it is, like, at its core, right, it's a first-person shooter. First-person shooters are still in vogue, right? You can make a great first-person shooter campaign, like, and like we've seen id Software put out a multiple dopest fuck Doom games, right? We've seen Machine Games put out Wolfenstein. Like, you've seen Titanfall too, right? Like, you can make a dope ass first person shooter, and I think that's all Crysis 4 needs to be, while also like harkening back and like referencing like the original Crysis games and like bringing that world forward. It's not impossible. It's not like they're making like Crackdown 4 or something, and it's like, cool, how does this work in 2022? Like, how does a modern version of these games work in 2022? Right. I think you make a dope Crysis game and make it work. But yeah, it is very interesting to see them hire the game director after the fact, because that is him having to come in and go, all right, I got to define this thing. I got to figure out how this thing goes. And so good luck to you, Matthias. Last news story for the Roper Report. Story number 7, WWE superstar The Miz wants to play Johnny Cage. This is Adele Anchors at IGN. WWE superstar Mike The Miz Mizanin is throwing his hat into the ring to play Johnny Cage in Mortal Kombat 2, the upcoming sequel to the 2021 video game movie adaptation. The former WWE champion is so serious about the role that he's already putting in work to hopefully get cast as Johnny Cage in the next Mortal Kombat movie. Speaking on Ryan Satin's Out of Character podcast per comicbook.com, Miz admitted he began training to play the character shortly after people on social media started fan casting him for the role. Quote, I've been working on my splits. I've been working on my kicks, Miz declared. Quote, he continues, as soon as I saw that Mortal Kombat was out and there was no Johnny Cage yet and my name was literally trending worldwide number one, we want Miz as Johnny Cage. I was like, if they want it to happen, I need to basically make sure that I'm prepared and ready if that opportunity presents itself, and or then I will be ready and focused, end quote. To this, I say, you go get him, Miz. I think this is a perfect fit. Janet, you're muted.
Sorry, I said it's the training version of like dress for the job you want, you know, situation. So
yeah,
learn how I don't to know. I mean, yeah, I feel like, you know, you were going to be working out anyway. Like it's might as well double down and kind of, I guess, drum up additional fanfare that's already like there and kind of like voice your support for it, and then see what ends up happening with it. So, yeah, go for it.
Janet, I'm so excited to see if The Miz gets picked to play Johnny Cage in the Mortal Kombat sequel. But that sequel is just so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to mom and pop shops today, where'd I look?
You'd look at the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Do 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 do, yeah. Out today, we got Wildcat Gun Machine for PC, PS4, Xbox One, and Switch, and then Evasion from Hell for PC, Switch, and Xbox One. We got no new dates, but we do have a deal of the day. Of course, it's May 4th. May the 4th be with you. It is Star Wars Day. There are a bunch of Star Wars Day deals. I want to highlight a group of Switch deals that you can get. This comes from VGC. You can get Star Wars Episode 1 Racer, one of my favorite Star Wars games. That right now is $7.49. There's the Star Wars Heritage Pack that is 5 games. That's at the very least in the UK. This VGC, of course, is a European website, and so they're listing things in pounds. There's no dollar amount here, so I don't know.
I wonder if that is a package that's only available in Europe.
Maybe. Yeah, if you're in Europe,
it is 30... they give dollar amounts for the rest of them, but just
they do. This is £36. £36 in 21, right? And so, like, if you're in Europe, you can probably take advantage of the Heritage Pack. If you're in the U.S., at the very least, you can get Star Wars Jedi Knight Jedi Academy for $10. The Star Wars Jedi Knight 2 Jedi Outcast, $5. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic for Switch, oh, that's $11.24. The Star Wars Pinball, $14.99, and the Star Wars Republic Commando you can get for $7.
I love that Pinball out of all of these is the most expensive title on its own.
I mean, there's probably something special about it. I never played the Star Wars Pinball game, but it must be off the chain. It must be like, remember when Pokemon Pinball came out?
Play Pinball, you know. Yeah.
Nah, but like the pinball people know. Like different pinball machines, it's like a very important thing. Like they all have different features, different objectives, different styles, different lights that shine at you. It's very important. Trust me.
Yes.
Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Rewrite and let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong so we can correct it for those watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. Let's see here. People write in about you're wrong regarding how to make waffles. We're not going to do this every single week, guys. All right. I can't read your wrongs about waffles because you guys are the wrong ones. It's okay to microwave your waffles. Nano says, while Hearthstone does take place in a tavern, the idea is actually a spin from the original World of Warcraft TCG from 2006. I don't know if that's you're wrong, but I think that is just additional info there. And then, let's see. Blessing just butchered the Miz's last name. Excuse me. I've had something in my throat this whole entire show. I apologize. The Miz's last name is pronounced Mizanin, not Mizanin. So there you go.
Sure.
And then the last you're wrong is the same thing. And so there you go. Mike Mizanin. Mizanin. Janet, tomorrow's hosts for Kinda Funny Games Daily are Greg and Tim. Before we go, where can people find you?
You can find me across the internet under the handle GameOnysus. That's Game O-N-Y-S-U-S.
Hell yeah. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this is Mike and Andy playing some of that Returnal. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, so stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.